Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
That is some absolutely world class sitting down there, staying at home, just sitting down. Oh look, there he goes. He's eaten his fourth sandwich of the day. This is remarkable.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnar Blog. James, good morning to you, because I got that perfectly this week. I didn't fuck it up.
Wow. It couldn't be goodlier. That's couldn't amazing.
Have. Yeah. It's not
that
as if
the first time ever.
Yeah, well, I wasn't even practicing or anything. So
it's
there
like
you go.
When you don't think about it. It's like Theo Walcott on finishing. The less you think about it, the better it goes.
The better it gets. Yeah, exactly. The automatisms, podcasting automatisms. How are you?
I am good, thank you. I think I've learned something this weekend, which is that basically, normally in my life, I don't really do a 5-day week. I'm sure you're sort of the same because of football and stuff. You end up working a lot on the weekends. But in the absence of football, I think, has my door just gone?
I don't know.
No, well, so early for an interruption in the podcast. One second, I've just got to answer the door.
Okay, no problem. Should put in the door answering music here, but maybe I'll just hang on and see what happens. Is anyone interesting calling to James's house? Can't hear. Probably the postman. Maybe the electricity guy come to read the meter. The gas dude. Could be any number of people. We'll find out soon enough. Who is it? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, who was it?
Do you know what? It was the postman.
Right, thought it might be.
And he put the thing through the letterbox, but he knocked as well. How do you feel about that? Do you think that's good postmanship? Because it's like, well, now they know they've got a delivery.
It seems too much. It's ostentatious.
I agree. It's like you might as well have graffitied his name on the door.
It's like doing a knee slide celebration when you scored the fifth goal and it's the 97th minute of a game. You know, come on, man.
Yeah.
Just, you know, do your job, put the ball in the net, walk back to the center circle, have a handshake if you want. But that's the postal equivalent of that.
There are some quite funny Arsenal examples of knee slides gone wrong. I mean, obviously, what's not funny is Patrick Vieira injured himself, I think.
Scoring against Manchester United in the 97-98 season.
But there are also Olivier Giroud and Aaron Ramsey have both done a thing where they have attempted knee slides, but the sort of ground hasn't been slick enough. They've just sort of fallen forward.
Go forward.
It is funny. Yeah.
I don't mind things like that. I think things like that are amusing. We need more of that. I miss things like that.
Part of the tapestry of football, aren't they?
They sure are.
My point that I was making.
Which was?
About weeks.
Oh, yes. I'd forgotten completely about that. I was, you know, sidetracked by
like
the postman.
It wasn't that interesting. Yeah, I know. Okay. But basically, I have been doing more of a Monday to Friday and then trying to have a weekend. But
right.
The problem is, once I get to about halfway through Saturday, I'm kind of like, sort of got nothing to do actually. So I get quite fed up in the second half of the weekend because I'm stuck in my house.
Yeah. No, we've been sort of watching classic movies of a Sunday and watching a movie on a Saturday night, you know, while many people are doing things on Saturday night over Zoom and stuff like that. I'm going to mention something now, but because my daughter is in Barcelona, we watch a movie together and we all just sort of WhatsApp, you know, about how terrible the movie is and stuff like that. And then Sunday evening classic movie. So we've done The Godfather parts 1, 2, and 3 now, the last right. 3 weeks. So yeah, it gives a little bit of structure to it. But were you doing quizzes by any chance at the weekend?
Oh, yeah, mate.
Yeah,
so
listen.
So many quizzes.
I'm gonna give a shout out to the guys. Got an email from Ross. He said, me and my friend were longtime readers, listeners to the podcast, and they've set up this thing called Quarantined Quiz, which is okay. at Quarantined Quiz on Twitter. And you can join in the website. Let me see if I can find it here. I should have had this up. I know it was here. I'll just search my email for the word quiz because I don't get too many quiz-related
stuff. Quiz-related
emails. It's
thequarantinedquiz.com.
Apparently free to play, but if you give a bit of a donation to charity, that's the deal with that. But they sent us a Twitter kind of quiz question thing here, which I've looked at briefly but haven't really looked at. So I'm going to send it to you on the chat thing here. You can open it up and see if we can get these things, get these questions answered. So there it is going through to you right now.
Okay. One for your followers, Arsenal and Gunlock. Name these three ex-Arsenal players.
Yeah.
So on my screen, the image hasn't loaded.
It hasn't. So reload, just refresh it, I guess.
Yeah, well, let's try it in a different. Oh, here you go.
Yeah,
oh, it's emoji based clues.
Exactly. So I looked at these briefly and couldn't figure them out because I'm really shit at this kind of stuff. So the first one is map truck leg truck long horse T-shirt.
We all remember him.
Yeah, I mean,
he was an excellent signing.
Yeah. Second one is, I don't know, Lion. Yeah.
Lion.
Sandwich test tube A.
Yeah.
And then the third one is music notes tent bell.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit, I'm not good with stuff like this. Are
right,
you good
I've
at
been
this?
Doing
You've been doing
quizzes.
Loads of quizzes, so I figure you are the expert at what's going on here. So,
by the way, I've still got more people, more friends coming out of the woodwork being like, shall we do a quiz at this point in lockdown? It's like, if we haven't done one before now, why wouldn't hang out normally. Why are we doing a quiz?
Exactly, and like, if you were so fucking into quizzes, why yeah. didn't we do any before?
Exactly. I mean, I never honestly thought I would be doing as many quizzes. On this, I haven't got a clue. I haven't got a clue. Map.
Map truck map. Leg. World van. Van. Oh.
Oh. Van Bronckhorst. That's Geo. Geo is the map.
Right,
van. Knee, the knee of the leg.
Okay, van.
Then van again.
Bronchial
bronch
for the horse.
For the lungs. Horse, tea, a T-shirt.
Van bronch. Why didn't they just put the letter T at the end? That's, you see, okay.
So the next one, shrugging lady lion.
Mm. Main.
Sandwich.
Main. Bread. Tuba.
Tuba.
Yeah.
Someone that ends in a Cazorla. Sanya. I don't know. And the other one.
San.
San as in sandwich.
Yeah.
I think there's a very heavy visual component here that.
Yeah.
If you've got these at home, you deserve a medal.
I will. I'll put it
retweet
in the notes. I'll put it
put
in,
them
the
in
notes.
The notes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'll give a retweet of this tweet. The third one note. Tent bell. Bell. Ring.
Tent ring.
Tent ring.
Music tent ring.
I don't know. I'm sure people are out there, as they do every week at this podcast, scream at their devices because of our ignorance. So no doubt they're doing that again. But if you want to find out more, thequarantinedquiz.com and Quarantined Quiz on Twitter. I mean, I have to say, if I were somehow co-opted into doing one of these things.
Sure.
And that was like the first question, I would like... I'd rage quit. I'd rage quit like a game of FIFA and just like say, fuck this.
The way to do it is you just pretend to freeze. You just stay very still.
Do you do that?
Yeah, quite a lot.
For comedy purposes. Just go...
Sure.
With your mouth wide open like you're saying something.
Yeah. But I'm often doing these quizzes with my wife, and it's quite hard to synchronise the fake freeze, you know?
Oh, yes, of course, because that would be a giveaway if the other person wasn't quite as frozen as you were.
It's unusual for half the screen to freeze, but it can happen.
Mm. Well, I'll take your word for it. Again, I've never been on Zoom, so...
You've still never even been on Zoom?
No.
You are the last man standing.
I must be at this point.
I respect it enormously.
I must be. So what else is going on? What else is, you know, there to chat about, you know, given that there's no football? Mark Govender, by the way, he says, I have 2 5-month-old golden retriever pups living in lockdown. The other night they chewed through the internet fiber cable. I've been on hold for 2 days on and off trying to get through to the ISP. I'm sad. I just needed to share. Hashtag Arscast Extra. Sorry about that, Mark.
That is tough. That has happened to me, actually. Someone, a dog once chewed through an Ethernet cable.
The dog ate my internet. It's a new development
in the
world.
And now the dog is permanently plugged into Google. You can ask it anything.
It's like, your dog is called Alexa all of a sudden, so.
Yeah.
The dogs, they're going to be called Siri and Alexa.
That would be a good development of Alexa. Like, I don't have an Alexa.
No, neither do I.
If it looked and sounded and, you know, moved about like a dog, if it was basically a robot dog, I'd be more interested.
Despite the privacy concerns and the fact that they're probably all in your room listening to every conversation that you have and recording it and uploading the audio to a database somewhere for evidence at some point that might be used against you, despite that.
I think so, yeah. I'd be fooled by the friendly dog disguise, yeah, for sure.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
Well, I guess, you know, is there news? No. The news is there is no news.
Right. What did you make of the Project Restart developments that we got last week in terms of the guidelines that clubs are being given to return to training and things like that?
I really have a twofold reaction. So I have to say that my instinctive emotional response is that it feels a little bit, I'm a bit uneasy with it. I think, you know, to be talking about football coming back at a time when the death toll is still as significant as it is, even if it might be stabilising or even on a downward trajectory, I don't personally feel massively comfortable with that. But I also accept, on the other side of the coin, that businesses have to think about how things are going to move forward, how they're going to continue to operate and continue to employ people. So, you know, those conversations have to happen. They're happening in every business, in every workplace, about how and when they can get back on their feet. So even though I might sort of initially find it a bit like, a bit sort of mucky, it also makes perfect sense.
Yeah, there was a good piece, I think, by Jonathan Wilson in The Guardian at the weekend.
Right.
You know, looking at it from that perspective, in that, yeah, it is. It seems wrong to think about football and to think about sport, but there are realities that go along with the lockdown, because whether we like it or not, football clubs are businesses, and businesses need to operate to survive, and some of them won't survive, and those are things that we do have to consider, and not just when it comes to football, of course, to just the wider implications of reopening and easing restrictions and getting businesses back up and running and getting people back to work so they can earn money and pay the bills and pay the rents and all of those kind of things. So, you know, on a visceral level, you look around and you look at what's happening and you look at the medical aspects of these things and you think, well, you know, football and those things don't matter. But you can't ignore the fact that, you know, they have to plan. And clearly from an Arsenal point of view, And not just Arsenal, for every football club there are real financial implications. I don't know if you heard the Nigel Phillips from the Arsenal Supporters Trust on the Arscast on Friday. And, you know, that's a pretty bleak picture for a club like Arsenal, which is, by any standards, a rich football club with a lot of cash in the bank relative to most other football clubs in the Premier League. The ones who aren't owned by nation states and oligarchs aside. You know, so if it's bleak looking for Arsenal, what is it like for the rest of the clubs? What's it like for clubs in the lower divisions and everything else? So I think they do have to talk about how it can come back, but obviously then act on the advice of medical experts and scientists about when exactly it might happen. But
yeah, because, even if you say, well, I don't think it should be coming back until next season, it's not like that means next season is going to be anything like a normal season. So sooner or later they have to find a way to move forward, and I think this will be a big week in the UK because we're expecting an update later in the week about how and when lockdown might be eased, and that will impact loads of businesses including football. But I mean, look, they're still looking at June, and it's almost impossible to say, because if I think, well, we've been in lockdown here for about 6 weeks, that feels like an absolute age ago that we went into it, and we're talking about 6 weeks in the future or something like that. So much can change so rapidly that even though it might seem incredibly ambitious at this point, it's difficult to know what the landscape will look like then.
Yeah, and then there was talk of playing the games behind closed doors. Obviously, I think everybody's accepted that, but at neutral venues, which is a decision that apparently has been made on the advice of the police, because let's say Arsenal are playing Tottenham and there's there are fans congregating outside the ground, even though they can't get in, just to sort of experience some of what football is about, to mitigate those risks. I don't know, Arsenal would be playing who knows where, whether, Birmingham playing at Villa Park or whatever it might be. You're not going to get local fans hanging around outside the ground, which makes sense, I suppose, but it still raises some questions, doesn't it, about the, like, it would make you think, what's the fucking point, in a way?
I mean, one thing that all this discussion has made me realise, and I think a lot of people had already realised it, but it's only come home to me when you talk about things like neutral venues and the amount of fixtures that we played in a week, is that the integrity of the 29-20 season is kind of irrevocably broken, isn't it? Like, even if you fulfil those fixtures, it's not a normal season by any stretch of the imagination at this point. And I think consequently it becomes very difficult to do things like relegate teams. I would be surprised, even if they play out the remaining fixtures, if they relegate anybody from the Premier League, just because I can see so many legal issues of clubs saying, well, it's essentially not fair. We didn't get our
I mean, look, I know that Premier League clubs and Premier League operators and everything else have come in for a fair amount of criticism over the last number of days, and the idea that the money is driving the decision making, which I think it is to a certain extent, but I do have some measure of sympathy, simply because nobody ever expected to have to deal with a situation like this, and the ongoing lack of clarity as to, if by some miracle they were able to say, look, it will be safe to play football again in June or July, at least you can sort of plan for that and make some sort of forward plans about what's going to happen next season, et cetera, et cetera. But because there's just no way of knowing when anything is going to be normal or safe, or, you know, even if football does come back and restrictions are eased, what if there's a second wave of the virus that requires another shutdown or lockdown? It's so difficult to make any definitive plans. It has to be fluid the whole time. So I do have some sympathy in that regard for the people trying to make decisions, because, yeah, how do you make anything fair?
Yes, I think I have sympathy too. I suppose where a bit of conflict comes into that is that there does seem to be, if you look at the clubs who oppose playing the remainder of the games for the season, it does seem to be those who might be relegated, and the clubs who want to finish the season are the ones who might secure European football. So, you know, people are incentivized in different ways. If you look at someone like Sheffield United, it'd be a disaster for them for this season to be voided effectively, or Liverpool being the obvious one, right?
What would happen with prize money? Because of the, where you finish in the Premier League, you get X amount of prize money, and then I think there are some issues or... some of that is tied to the overseas rights in a way, or did it used to be? Maybe it's equalized now that every team gets the same amount of overseas rights money. But, you know, that would be an issue as well, wouldn't it? That, you know, you're still talking millions of pounds there when it comes to prize money and potential European football, and just another angle.
Yeah, I mean, that's another reason that I think, you know, the season will be finished, be that by playing the games, by points per game, by whatever means necessary. They will determine standings, I think, for this season. But it won't be a season like any other. And, you know, it will always have that asterisk against it. And I think the same will be true of next season. Next season will be... Decidedly unusual. I mean, it makes me think, remember when Spurs were building their stadium and people were sort of querying the integrity of, well, they're playing some of their games at Wembley and some at White Hart Lane and stuff like that. It's like, that's small fry now, you know. Just a purely selfish thing here, I sort of look at it and go, am I going to be at these games? Like, you know what I mean? Like, are the journalists going to be allowed to attend them?
Yeah.
If so, what does that involve? Are we allowed to do press conferences? Are we allowed to... I can't imagine a mix zone is, you know, likely.
No,
thing.
So I mean,
there's all that stuff to consider as well.
That's true as well, yeah, because, you know, press boxes are generally quite tight, aren't they? It's difficult to sit 2 meters away.
Too tight for me, some of them. I mean, I've got to tell you, Everton's, I'm too big for that press box. It's a nightmare. How do you do that? Do you spread people out? And then I think, you know, when crowds start to come back in, well, I imagine that will be gradual rather than the Emirates going from 0 to 60,000. I imagine they might stagger it and let... you know, a certain degree of...
But how could you do that? How can you say only these people are allowed in? Do you do it by ballot or something? Like, let's say they decide you can have one-third capacity in the ground because it spaces people out. A, how do you sort out the spacing? And B, if you've got 40,000 season ticket holders, how do you tell 20,000 that they can't come in?
True.
Assuming that, like, anyone is renewing their season tickets.
Well, yeah, a few people made the joke that in that circumstances, Arsenal would still announce the attendance as 59,000. Yeah. Of course they would.
Of course.
It is sort of grimly fascinating, isn't it, to envisage how it might play out. And also, we were talking about the Premier League at this point, but, you know, the divisions below that, I think it's even more desperate. You know, the television money not being quite what it is at Premier League level, or not even nearly what it is, shall we say, those clubs are dependent on the revenue provided by match-going fans. And without that, can they function at all? I think, you know, the Football League and the Premier League are on different timelines here. And much of that is down to to finances.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, they'd be much more impacted by football being played behind closed doors because so much more of their revenue comes from tickets and match day revenue and everything else. Well, I don't know. I'm glad I don't have to sort it out. That's all I'm saying. I can just sit here and pick holes in every single theory or plan that they come up with rather than have to do anything myself.
That's true. And how do you, are you sort of potentially looking forward to some football happening?
I don't, I don't know because, yeah, look, I want football back. But then what you're getting isn't what you lost, if you know what I mean. You're getting the game, but none of the stuff that makes the game really that, really interesting and exciting, and you know, the passion and the crowds and the, you know, the back and forth and everything else. There's something awful about football being played behind closed doors. It's why it's sort of one of the punishments that's very rarely, in fairness, dished out to clubs, because it's so anathema to what football is supposed to be about.
Yeah.
That they so rarely do it. Like, you know, club and their fans are being a bit racist. So rather than impose the kind of punishment on them, which would make fans reconsider their behavior, which is lock them out of the ground and don't let them in because they have been racist or whatever it might be, the club gets like a 20,000 euro fine. You know, the game's authorities have been extremely reluctant, despite the fact that it would have been merited in many, many more cases, they've been extremely reluctant to impose that kind of sanction on football clubs because it just goes against so much of what football is about and what makes football great as a spectacle for those inside the ground and obviously those watching on television as well. And now we're being asked to say or to consider the idea that football coming back in this guise is somehow a really positive development. Okay, it's good, we'll have football back, but as a spectacle, as a piece of entertainment, it's lacking something fundamental. So I don't quite know what to feel about it, you know?
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if I've mentioned it on here. Have I talked about my theory that a sort of small online cottage industry will strike up where people will take the goals that are scored behind closed doors and sort of apply audio and visual treatment to them to make them look like they were scored in front of a crowd?
See, I wonder if it wouldn't surprise me if the broadcasters
Do it themselves.
Like they have a sound guy and you've got some, you know, generic crowd noise, and then there are various faders for, like, you know, chance being missed. Ooh. Or, a guy goes in with a late tackle. That kind of stuff. And I reckon if they broadcast the games live, but with, let's say, a 10 or 15 second delay, you know, before they go out on air, so they can mix in the sound in so-called real time, you know, that I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was part of the deal.
And what about CG fans? Do you think that's too far?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Plus, they'd have to make all the seats green in every stadium for it to work anyway, you know, for green screen.
That's true.
Which might work if you're Plymouth Argyle, but I don't know who else plays in green. If you're Ireland, if they played every game in the Aviva Stadium, the old Lansdowne Road, it might just work.
So you might just have the surreal spectacle of, you know, the sound of fans going crazy as Aubameyang puts it in the net. But what you can actually see in the stand is me sat 10 seats away from James Bench.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what it is, yeah. Was it Borussia Mönchengladbach?
Yeah.
Who've got cardboard cutouts. So you send in a picture of yourself and they like print out your face and put it on a cardboard cutout and put it in the stands. Maybe that's
it. It's quite funny.
I mean,
there was a revenue stream, potentially.
There was the mural at Highbury, of course, when the North Bank was being redeveloped. So maybe that. I don't know. I mean, they could get like the big cloth drapes that sort of stretch out over all the seats, because you'd only need to do it maybe on what, 60% of the ground, because the cameras are on one side. Oh, of course there'd be replays from the other angle, so you'd have to do it the whole way around.
That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, I imagine that... I mean, I was going to say, you know, that you could use that space to put up a message, you know, thanking the NHS or something like that. But then I thought, this is football clubs we're talking about here. They might see that as an opportunity to sell effectively advertising space.
Yes.
I don't know how that would be received.
I don't know. buy your Arsenal branded face masks and
sure,
stuff like that.
Yeah, from the armory. Mm. That's maybe too cynical of me to think. But yeah, it's going to be weird. I mean, one thing that could be interesting is, I mean, I say it'll be interesting. I think it'll be interesting for about 30 seconds is hearing what players say and shout at each other.
See, that's why I think they'll put noise in so we don't.
Right. Right.
We don't.
Yeah, because the old hand over the mouth trick's not going to fly anymore.
Yeah, and there's going to be, you know, look, as somebody with hands-on experience of football
broadcasters. Of course, you have to
believe everything. Yeah, they get very, very anxious about swear words going out live on television.
This is why you're not on TV more.
Yeah, this is why the NBC guys turned around to us and offered us some sweets. To stop. He did. He offered us sweets. He said, I thought if you had your mouth full, you wouldn't swear. I was like, fuck's sake, man. But, you know, we modified our language anyway. But, you know, if they're that worried because they can hear the odd fan in the background throwing in the odd F or whatever it might be, with players shouting and screaming at their teammates and each other and managers on the sidelines who are, it's fair to say, renowned for their industrial language, even though we can hear it, that is going to be an issue for broadcasters because they don't want that going out on air, particularly if a game is going out 12:30 on a Saturday afternoon or 4:00. This is not post-watershed stuff. So that's why I think there will be some kind of accompanying soundtrack so we don't hear that.
Mm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because otherwise, they'll just have to cut the audio so much that it'll just be silent for long periods.
Yeah.
So they'll have to bed it with something. And look, Sky are not averse to doing this. They've done it plenty of times when people have chanted against Sky during matches and played in sort of, you know, random crowd sounds to cover it. So, yeah, I think that's very, very, very likely.
Mm.
I don't know. Maybe we'll have a better atmosphere than we usually do.
Who knows? Who knows? Maybe there could be some, like, you know, some kind of Britain's Got Talent type program made for fans of their own football clubs to submit chants and everything else, or form choirs. Who knows?
Sure. Celebrity chanters, you know.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, God. Speaking of singing, actually, I saw this question on the on the Facebook, and it comes from Richard Scott, and he says, are you tired of the cringeworthy charity songs despite the good cause? What's the worst you've heard and the worst football team cover song?
Right. Well, I haven't heard it, but is her name Amanda Holden? Amanda Holden, the actress and presenter of Britain's Got Talent.
Right.
I'm sure I read that she had released a charity record. Hang on. Have I got this right?
I don't know. You tell
yes,
me.
Yes, she has released her debut single, a cover of Over the Rainbow, to raise money for the NHS.
Oh, my God. I was going to do a tweet at the weekend, actually, and I was going to... I actually had the WhatsApp thing written out and then I was like, oh, no, I won't. But I was going to say, like, can you just take a quick picture of yourself pretending to sing into a microphone? And I was going to pretend to sing into my microphone here. And then I was going to do, like, we've come together to do an Arsenal podcaster version of Imagine, you know, to raise awareness and to lift the spirits of the people.
That
who
would
are,
actually be very funny.
It would have been. But then I just kind of, I had to go out somewhere and then I forgot to do it. So...
You get me, you, the guys from Arsenal Vision.
Yeah.
Elliot.
Elliot would have been fucking well on that. He would have done it. All we'd have to do, he'd say, this is not a joke. I'll do it.
I'm surprised he hasn't done it, actually. Hey, shout out to the Arsenal Vision guys who've raised a load of money, actually.
Yeah, for the Arsenal Foundation. Well done, chaps. That was brilliant. £10,000, I believe, for the Arsenal Foundation. So congratulations to those guys and well done to everybody for their generosity in supporting the cause.
But Amanda Holden, yeah, I mean, apparently it entered the charts at number 4. So look,
somewhere over the rainbow.
I can't object to the good cause, you know, and the money raised, yeah. But I can't imagine buying a record by Amanda Holden.
No, neither can I. Neither can I. What about football songs in general? I was reminded when he asked that question of what I think is one of the most egregious moments in both football and pop music history.
Mm.
And it is the Anfield Rap.
Oh.
Now, I know there's a great website called the Anfield Rap, and hello to those guys who are, you know, doing all their Liverpool stuff.
They've reclaimed the term.
They have, but they've put a W in front of it and sort of made it respectable again. But the reason this always got on my tits was the very first line. And I'm going to play it for you here and see if you can figure out which bit of this makes me want to give John Barnes a wedgie. All right?
All right.
Here we go.
Liverpool FC is hard as hell. United, Tottenham, Arsenal.
Arsenal.
Liverpool FC is hard as hell. United, Tottenham, Arsenal. Arsenal.
Arsenal? What the fuck is Arsenal?
I don't know.
Come on, man.
Yeah, that's they've really worked hard to make that rhyme.
I know, like I know sometimes you've got to, but that's not good enough.
Liverpool FC is hard as hell.
Oh God, man.
Yeah, that's
bad. I mean, someone actually messaged me on Twitter in the week. I'll give them a shout. Their name is Northbank at AJDeb90 and said, remember this? Mention it on the podcast tomorrow. And it was a YouTube link to the Arsenal version of Hot Stuff.
Oh, yeah,
from
1998.
Do you remember that?
I do.
Christopher and Nicholas showing them how. One of the lyrics referenced.
Wasn't, was it in the podcast I recently did with Amy, didn't she say that she was on the backing vocals for that?
I think
or
that might be
was
right.
It that,
you know?
Was that the song that she was doing the backing vocals for? I can't remember.
Wouldn't surprise me. She's got fingers in a lot of pies.
Right.
I'm just looking up the lyrics now because there are some great ones in that. I seem to remember Lewis Boamorte gets mentioned. Like, it's one of those things where, like, you know, they tried to mention everyone, but it results in, like, some slightly dubious lyrics.
Yeah.
Does anyone have a document of all the lyrics? I don't know. What other football songs? I mean, what was the Spurs? Aussie's on his way to Wembley.
Yeah, exactly. Anything involving Chaz and Dave can get in the fucking sea, of course, because it's, you know, Tottenham. You know, I think we have to give a mention to Paul Gascoigne as well, Fog on the Tyne.
Yeah,
which was
it's all his.
It's truly, truly appalling. But then I found an article, I think it's on Bleacher Report, and apparently Morten Gamst Pedersen did a song.
Yeah.
Ryan Babel did a freestyle rap. Not the only one to do that. You were talking, was it Quincy?
Quincy Owusu-Abeyi.
What's
AKA
he called now?
Blow.
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 There are more. Clint Dempsey was a rapper.
Yeah. Basil Boley and Chris Waddle did a song.
Of course. Hoddle and Waddle.
Well, there was Hoddle and Waddle, but Basil Boley and Chris Waddle.
I love you. Darling, I love you.
Diamond lights. Unbearable.
Now, this one really surprised me.
Go on.
Vinnie Jones teamed up with Jules Holland to do a version of Big Bad Leroy Brown.
Wow.
What the fuck? Too many people were on too much cocaine back then.
Yeah, I think, speaking of blow, I think that might well be the case. There are some absolutely... Andy Cole had a song, if you remember, that was quite bad.
I forget what it was called.
It was terrible, though.
It was called Outstanding.
Yes, it was.
And it was not great.
It was not good at all. I'm just looking through an album of football songs and there are things on there that I didn't know. Rude Hullet, Not the Dancing Kind. Justin Fashanu, Do It Because You Like It.
Right. Wow. Okay.
Okay, interesting one.
It is a murky world.
It's a murky, murky world. And I have to say, I'm a little bit sad it's over because I think there's something definitely very funny about it.
We haven't had one for a while, have we? Like, there hasn't been
I think... Memphis Depay is the closest. He's done a couple of... Have you ever seen his Memphis Depay sort of Instagram raps that he does?
No.
I think they'd make you want to tear off your own skin if you did.
Right, okay. Well, that's pretty much made my mind up there.
But yeah, I mean, Arsenal had hot stuff. I'm trying to think if we had something in 2002. Well, I think that was the last one.
All right. Well, look, having exhausted the world of football and football songs, it seems like a good place to leave part one.
Okay.
So we'll do that, and we'll come back in part two with your questions, plus, James, some Magpie content.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Right after this.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog, also on the ArsBlog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArsBlog, from which we've already taken a question. Those of you on Facebook who take umbrage at the fact that we often forget to take questions from Facebook.
Your next question will be in 10 seasons' time.
Whenever that is. And also on the ArsBlog Discord server, which you get access to if you are an ArsBlog member on Patreon. I'm going to start, James, with the Magpie content, because I think we need to do this, then we'll get into some questions.
Sure.
So you remember a few, I don't know how long ago now, but we discovered this thing called Cameo.
I'm well aware of Cameo, yes.
On which celebrities peddle their wares, and you basically send them a message and they send you a video back, and it's like, oh, dear Snoop Dogg, you're the greatest. Will you say hi to my grandparents? They love you. And Snoop Dogg will do a message to your grandparents or whatever it might be.
Mm.
So we had one involving Gilbert Gottfried, the comedian, the voice of, what was he in Aladdin? He was in Aladdin.
He was Iago the parrot.
Yes. And he's a comedian. He's got his own podcast, the amazing, colossal Gilbert Gottfried podcast, whatever it was. And he gave us a message, and it was quite weird and bizarre, but very funny.
Yes.
So I thought it might be interesting to go back, because people were saying, can you get us some magpie facts, magpie related content, etc., etc. And I was thinking, okay, yeah, maybe I could get Gilbert Gottfried to give us some magpie facts. So I sent him a message via Cameo, and I said, hello, Gilbert Gottfried. My buddy James is having a hard time during the COVID-19 lockdown.
Aren't we all?
His best friend is a magpie called Maggie, who lives in a field nearby. He really misses her. Could you give him 2 or 3 magpie facts? You can just invent them, if you like, to make him feel better. And I was thinking, this'll be funny, because Gilbert Gottfried will give us some magpie facts.
Yeah.
And he's going to invent some crazy magpie facts.
Crazy magpie facts, yeah.
Didn't quite go that way.
Okay.
Didn't quite go that way. This is what happened. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried. This is for James McNichols, and it's being sent by Andrew. Well, James, you're having a hard time during COVID-19 lockdown, and your best friend is a magpie. A magpie who lives in a field nearby. And you really miss her. You want to know something, James? Don't feel bad about having a best friend who's a magpie. There are other people who are best friends with magpies, and sometimes they talk to them. They're known as serial killers. And kind of like you. One day, James, they're going to arrest you, and the prison psychiatrist will talk to you, and you'll be saying, "It's a magpie, but no one else can see him. Only me. He gives me orders. He wants me to kill." James, I really, really think it's time for help, okay? Just take it from me.
Wow. I mean, thank goodness I'm not actually, you know, sad and bereft about my friend Maggie the Magpie.
Thankfully. That wouldn't have made you feel any better, would it?
No, it wouldn't have helped in that circumstance. But as things are, I really enjoyed it.
He wants me to kill! They're called serial killers. He gives me orders!
Wow.
Brilliant.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean,
I was happy with it in the end. Go on.
Is he getting rich out of doing these, do we think?
I don't know. It depends how many he gets.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it did cost me money. But, you know, for the entertainment purposes, I think it was worth it.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm a little bit sorry we didn't get Gilbert Gottfried to give us a magpie fact. An invented one. I think he could have been quite creative about it, but in the circumstances, I feel like, you know, he gave us good stuff for the podcast.
Listen, you know, he heard what you said about my obsession with magpies and decided that they are the ravings of a serial killer. And it's very difficult to disagree with his objective analysis there.
Yeah, and to be fair, there was some good advice at the end. Get some help. If this is real, get some help. I think there's a conscientiousness involved in that.
Absolutely.
Which maybe you wouldn't have expected. Social conscience.
We should have shared this. Mental Health Week's coming up later in the month. We've gone early with this, if anything. Yeah. Thank you very much, Andrew. I'm very touched by your gesture and Gilbert's words.
Well, there you go. I'm glad it touched you in the right special area.
Absolutely extraordinary. Speaking to celebrities, can I ask a question that's come from Asbjorn Carlsbeck?
Sure.
I had a real go at that, Asbjorn. I hope that's right. He's at GodBear98 on Twitter. And the question says, how is it, as Arsenal fans, to regularly speak with slash interview so many Arsenal legends in the pods you take part in? Ian Wright, Cesc Fabregas, Lee Dixon, etc. And who has been your favourite or least favourite to talk to?
Who has been my... I don't think anyone's been my least favourite.
Yeah, that's a difficult one to answer, isn't it?
It is a difficult one because, you know, if you ever want to speak to that person again, you can't really say, well, they were terrible. And to be fair, you know, nobody has been terrible. I haven't had a bad experience. You know, I can remember one of the early podcast stuff might have been Lee Dixon or it might have been Perry Groves, I think. I can't quite remember, but I remember being like, oh, I'm going to talk to an Arsenal player here. I'm being very nervous about it. And I still get nervous. You know, I get nervous about, you know, what I'm, not necessarily what I'm going to say, but I want, you know, particularly when it comes to, let's say, the Cesc interview, I really want it to be good for everyone who's listening. So you kind of, it's not so much the pressure of talking to the person, but making sure that in the conversation that you have, you ask questions that get good answers. You know what I mean? So you want, absolutely, you want the thing to be good for everyone.
And do you do a lot of prep, say for the Cesc thing? Like, did you know what you were going to ask going in?
I had sort of bullet points. I looked some stuff up and I had some bullet points and certainly areas that I wanted to cover, but I don't ever write out a list of questions because right, I feel like if you do that, it can become like what you want to have is a conversation, right? So you don't want to have questions 1 to 20 and you ask question 1 and he gives you an answer which might lead you to going off on a tangent somewhere, which is interesting. Yeah. You don't just want to say, okay, thank you, and then ask question number 2. So you've got to sort of let the conversation flow because I think that makes it more interesting for everybody. What was the original question? Who's the best and the worst?
Favorite,
I mean, everybody's been great. I mean, I think I've managed to get some good interviews with people and obviously would like to get some more. Philippe Senderos was a good one as well. I thought that was a really good interview. Every time Ian Wright is on, it's always great because there's one where you don't have to do a huge amount of preparation because he'll just talk the hind legs off me, which is fantastic. But, you know, it's always brilliant to have him on. I tell you the one, not that it was the worst or anything like it, but I remember interviewing Martin Keown. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, the podcast, you know, we try and be serious, but, you know, at the heart of it, we don't take everything a bit too seriously. But Martin is quite a serious guy. Like, I remember we were talking about, I can't remember, I think it was around the time of an FA Cup semi-final or something like that. And I remember just sort of dropping in the odd line or two, which you hope will lighten the mood. And I'm not necessarily they landed the way I would have hoped.
I think,
but he was spot on with what he said, but quite serious.
He is a very, very serious man and he's very intense, you know, and we saw that on the pitch. But yeah, he's very, very serious. And go on.
I was just thinking of the time when this season when he was when he was late for a game on BT Sport, one of our Europa League games, and the guy presenting had a little bit of a joke at him and said, oh, well, you're here at last, Martin. And he said something like, well, somebody jumped in front of a train. It wasn't my fault. And the guy was like,
yeah. Well, there are all these great stories that come out of old Arsenal training sessions where, you know, when they used to play a one-touch game, all the rest of the squad used to try and make Martin lose because he was so hated losing and took everything so seriously. In terms of the best, it's really hard to say, but I have to say that we, on Handbrake Off last week, we had Bob Wilson on.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the 1970, is it
the Fairs Cup?
Final?
Yeah.
Fairs Cup final, which sort of predated the UEFA Cup and now Europa League. But hearing the way he speaks about Arsenal and Highbury and how evocative his memories are. You know, it really... It made me connect with the club in sort of a different way. It's sort of, you know, the tradition and the history and what Arsenal means beyond, you know, the results and beyond, you know, the media and the stuff that we're sort of dealing with day to day. I thought he really spoke to that in a great way, and he's such a brilliant storyteller anyway. That one really sort of stood out to me as a recent one that I thought he was brilliant. Yeah, and how does it feel speaking to these people? Like Andrew says, always slightly nerve wracking. always slightly nerve wracking picking up the phone to someone who you watch play football, and always exciting too.
Yeah, positive, you know. You don't want to say anything stupid that makes them go, "Oh, that fucking Jesus, what the fuck."
Absolutely.
Why have I given my time to this person or what have you? But, you know...
I've got to say as well, actually, just someone else who I think's been really interesting. I've actually interviewed them a couple of times. And someone who I think we gave a bit of a hard time in their tenure at Arsenal is Dick Law, who used to do Arsenal's transfer negotiating. Yes, the man himself. But I have to say, an incredibly nice, intelligent guy. And, you know, of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that
he tells his own side of the story very well. Is that what you're saying?
He tells his own side of the story very well, but a very, very nice person. Like
I believe that because some years ago, actually, it could have been the game that we played against Leicester where Welbeck scored the goal. And before the game, I was lucky enough to get a bit of a tour of the dressing room on match day and stuff like that from somebody. And Dick Law was in there and just sort of came over and introduced himself, said, "Hello, I'm Dick." And he was very nice. And I was a bit like, "Oh, hi." I'm not going to tell you who I am, but...
No. But, you know, I guess, you know, being nice isn't always the right quality in business.
Or, yeah, maybe, you know, not. Maybe not. But, you know, I'm sure.
But it does go a long way. And I think, you know, we know what we know about Arsene Wenger. If he's going to have someone around for 9 years, they've got to at least be a decent enough person, you'd suspect.
Mm. Okay, is it my question?
It is.
Okay, from the Discord, Scott Rogers Wolfson says, "I've been watching back old games, the 98 FA Cup final, the 5-1 at the San Siro, Arsene's first game, a 2-0 win versus Blackburn Rovers. What past games would you say are worth a rewatch, particularly games that exemplify the qualities of some of the great players that we've had?"
Give me his list of what he watched again, sorry.
The 1998 FA Cup final, which was 2-0 against Newcastle, Overmars and Anelka. The 5-1 at the San Siro, where Thierry Henry...
That's a great one.
Oh, my God, that goal. I love that goal so much.
Mm-hmm.
Arsene's first game, a 2-0 win against Blackburn Rovers.
Which I don't remember at all. Two goals, I believe.
Well, remembered.
Well, I tell you what, Tim Stillman, shout out to Tim Stillman, has been doing rewatching season reviews on his Twitter timeline.
Yeah.
And that's brought a few games to my attention. I don't know if you could track this game down, but when Arsenal played Sheffield Wednesday at home in 1996-97, Patrick Vieira came on for his debut. I think he came on in the first half after an injury. And that is... I think Ian Wright scored a hat-trick in the game. I'd be surprised if you can get the footage, but it was on television, it was on Sky. And the way that Vieira, as soon as he stepped onto the field, just completely looked a class act and almost a transformative player, like a new idea of what a central midfielder could be as a kind of showcase of that.
Yeah.
I'd have to have that on the list. Just trying to think of others, really. Are there any that jump out very immediately?
Yeah, I mean, one which we said we were going to do, actually, which we might do and do like a podcast / commentary on it, was the game in 2002.
At Old Trafford.
At Old Trafford, when we went there and we won the league. So I think we will do that and rewatch that game because I remember my gut feeling... is that it was a really, really physical game.
It was
a hugely physical game, and I don't think we had no Thierry Henry that night.
I think maybe no Patrick Vieira. I seem to remember it might have been Ray Parler and Eddie.
No, I think Vieira. Did he play that?
Oh, really?
I think so, because I have a sort of recollection of an early coming together between himself and Roy Keane, and it sort of set the tone for United's aggression, but our ability to...
He did play, you're right. You're
to cope
right.
with that, yes. Yeah, so...
He did play with Edu, yeah. It was... but yeah, I mean, it was a really physical game. I think I'm right in saying today is the anniversary of... It's only Ray Parler. Ray Parler's kind of destroying Tim Lovejoy.
Oh, and, yeah.
That was the same week as that Old Trafford game. And I think Ray Parler was man of the match at Old Trafford. Like, it was a very industrial game, and he was kind of central to that.
Yeah.
That game also featuring the confusing celebration where I thought Kanu jumped over a standing Sylvain Wilfred.
Yeah, everybody thought that day was actually kneeling down.
Yeah, that was a good one. I mean, if you've not seen Arsenal 4, Liverpool 2 from the Invincibles campaign, that's an incredible match, I think, and performance, particularly from Thierry Henry.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of games which don't... aren't surrounded in sort of disappointment, if you like. Do you know what I mean? That they come from seasons which are a bit heartbreaking.
I mean, yeah.
Where you
I
look
mean,
at the so, team and you go, oh, well, wow, we should have fucking done more that season, etc.
Yeah, I mean, 2006 a tricky one in that respect, you know, because obviously we got to the Champions League final and no one ever wants to watch that game ever again. But along the way, you know, winning in Madrid... for example.
Yeah, the Real Madrid game. I definitely watched that again.
Both Real Madrid games, actually. Like, the 0-0 at home was one of the most pulsating 0-0s you'll ever see.
Remember that layman save from Raul?
I do,
unbelievable.
Yeah. At a time when Raul was sort of the golden boy, really, of Spanish football, didn't miss a chance, you know, as far as we could see it. Yeah, so that would be a great one. I think as well, another interesting game from that campaign would be the Juventus match, the home game, Vieira's return to Highbury and Fabregas scoring one and setting up another. Like, that was a seminal night.
The one where Robert Pires slide tackle Patrick Vieira, took the ball.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, yeah, some big games there. And I think obviously if you're going to look at things for entertainment purposes, you know, the 5-2s against Tottenham.
If you don't remember those ones, they're definitely worth checking out. Yeah, 2014 FA Cup final, if you're more recent to it. Don't watch the 2005 FA Cup final. We were so bad. We saw that one.
God, unbelievable. It was such a bad game.
The jammiest.
Watch the penalty shootout. We took good penalties.
We did, yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah, I think they would be the ones. I mean, it'd be interesting to go back and watch 98 winning at Old Trafford, Mark Overmars' goal. That was such a huge game.
Oh, you know, yeah. Who was playing right back for United that day? Some Spencer, was that his name?
Was it...
I
know what you mean. John Curtis or someone like that.
Yeah. Maybe that was his name. Overmars destroyed him.
Yeah. Maybe it was John Curtis. Many.
It was John Curtis. He was taken off after 52 minutes.
There you go.
For Ben Thornley. So wow. I don't know.
There are so many that are great. I mean, if you don't remember the Invincibles, I always think the 5-3 win over Middlesbrough is astonishing.
Oh, yeah, that's a brilliant game. Brilliant game. Because it has everything. It has everything. Mm. You know, amazing football, the Highbury screamer. When the Frank Kadru goal goes in,
absolutely,
all you hear in the back is, amazing.
A brilliant goal from Jose Reyes, and obviously a poignancy about that.
Mm.
Some good ones
there if you can track them down. We'll do that. We'll do the 0-2 game at Old Trafford, and we'll maybe, you know, we'll press play at the same time and just watch and commentate. I'd be interested to see what kind of observations we make based on the game, the way we play, and based on what United, you know, because at that time it was two behemoths, two really, really good teams.
And without wishing to prejudge it, I think we will be really struck by how much more physical we are then than we are now. in some ways.
Okay.
But we shall see.
We shall see.
Question from Twitter, Paulie Boy at pfortunato 1985. Since I can remember, Arsenal have had only three Italian players in the last 20 years, two goalkeepers and one forward, Lupoli, who I think only made around nine appearances.
Mm.
With all the great Italian players, especially during Wenger's reign, why do you think we never went for any?
That's a really good question. There were four that I can remember anyway, because there was a young central defender called Niccolò Galli.
Very true. And then the keepers are Viviano...
Emiliano and Manone. Right?
And Manone.
Yeah. And Lupoli. Unfortunately, Niccolò Galli died in... I can't remember what year it was, but he was only 16, 17 maybe, in an accident back home on a scooter, a moped of some kind.
Terrible,
which is quite tragic, but big things were really expected of him. But I don't suppose he would have been what you would consider a typical signing, because he was with the club from a very young age, so he would have been one of those, you know, that grew up in the academy, sort of taking like a Chesney route to the first team, if you like. Why didn't we bring in Italian? That's a good question. There haven't really, of all the nationalities, there haven't been that many. Like, it feels to me like Italy was slightly underrepresented in Premier League terms in general. Well, like, I know there were some good players who came, some of them towards the end of their careers, if you like. If you think of Viali and you think of... do you know who signed for Chelsea? And I always really liked him as a player, and he got injured very early on, was Casiraghi.
Yes, he had a terrible injury. I mean, I was going to say, Chelsea had a real culture of Italian players. Well,
they did have, Italian, Hullett was manager who had played so long in Serie A.
Absolutely. And Viali arrived, and he was also the manager there.
Zola.
And they had Zola, they had Casiraghi, they had Di Matteo, they had a centre-half from Milan too, a really top centre-half who came over, towards the end of his career. Sheffield Wednesday, of course, had Carbone and Di Canio.
Yeah.
You know, that was... But they were kind of relatively unique in that period. You're right, there was a novelty about people coming from Italy. I think...
Well, Di Canio came via Celtic.
Yeah.
Didn't he? Yeah.
I think that there are a couple of things. I think Serie A was pretty strong in that period, so maybe there was kind of less of a temptation. I mean, that was quite a golden period, I think, for Italian top-flight football. It was almost like a cultural thing where they would appear at certain... And it's funny, like Chelsea, if you go to Chelsea, the Italian restaurants are kind of still there where, you know, they all went out for dinner. And in the way that Arsenal had that French clique, that Chelsea had that for Italy. And I think we just went in that direction, maybe, and that's where Wenger's contacts were.
Yeah, I mean, but isn't it curious when you think about it that... Three of our greatest ever players came to Arsenal. They weren't Italian, but they came to Arsenal via Italy. Dennis Bergkamp from Inter Milan, Patrick Vieira from AC Milan, and Thierry Henry from Juventus.
Mm-hmm. And we also signed in the 90s David Platt from Sampdoria.
Yeah, less said about that, the better.
I'm sure there are... I mean, we were definitely scouting Italy. It's not the case that we weren't. I recently spoke to...
Di Claw?
Damian Comolli, actually.
Oh, right, okay,
name.
Yeah.
At it, and he was talking about watching Thierry Henry at Juventus in 1997 through to 99 when he started. And it's not like we weren't bothering with it.
Yeah.
It just didn't really ever take off. I'm trying to think if there were Italians that we were linked with and missed out on. I seem to remember we were linked with Svomnir Boban quite a bit from Italy.
Really?
Obviously he's not Italian. Yeah. But I'm just trying to think of any more. I mean, in the last few years, there have always been sort of like crazy stories about, you know, what's the centre-back at Napoli, Koulibaly, or the striker at Torino with the £100 million buyout clause or something like that.
Yeah.
But I've always taken them with a bit of a pinch of salt because it's just not a historic shopping ground.
Yeah,
for us, really.
True. I don't know why, but, you know, maybe it'll change. Who knows? But we're not spending hundreds of millions of pounds on anyone as and when football goes, because we've got to, spend our money on sound effects.
I guess... am I right in saying that Gabriel Martinelli could yet choose to play for Italy?
He could, even though I think he is going to play for Brazil, isn't he?
I think so.
He has sort of, he was called up for
He's
a squad.
A bit.
Yeah, but there was a squad that was supposed to take place this summer, wasn't there? Some tournament that he was called up for.
It's the Olympics, I think.
Oh.
It would have been.
Right, well, there you go. Well, that's not happening. Speaking of Martinelli, Kian O'Sullivan, who's at Kian O'Sullivan 21, says, "Morning, gents. I felt our young players were having quite an impact on our season before it was cut. Do you have a standout moment for each one? Can be good or bad?"
Yeah, I saw this question. Good question.
So who? Let's just get the names of the young players.
Define the list.
Saka.
Martinelli.
Martinelli. Willock.
Yes. Nketiah.
Maitland-Niles, does he count? Does Maitland-Niles really count?
I'm going to say he doesn't.
I think that's probably fair, to be honest.
Reece Nelson.
Is Guendouzi a young player? Do we count Guendouzi? I mean,
let's count him
young
on age profile, yeah. Although I think, you know, we're, he's further along maybe in his development than some of these, but let's say him. And I think, should we leave out Emil Smith Rowe? I mean, it just feels like he's...
Yeah, he wasn't around enough,
I
don't
really
think.
Figured enough. So I tell you, the first moment that springs out to me, actually, is at, Joe Willock's goal at Anfield.
Yes, that was my moment for Joe Willock, actually, because that was a fucking great goal.
Yeah. So that's the one that jumps out. I mean, Martinelli, I think, has an obvious one.
You think the Chelsea?
I do, yeah.
I don't. I mean, it's a great goal, but I think the first header he scored, where he sort of came to the near post and powered a header into far corner.
His first goal for the club?
No.
Oh, is it not?
No, I think the first one was that not a... I think it was a Callum Chambers cross or something, or an over. I can't remember, but he bulleted a header in. But I think this might have been the next game where it was a could have been a Tierney cross.
Different header. Okay. Yeah.
Different header.
Yeah.
But it was just something about that header that made me go, okay, there's something. This guy's the, you know, this kid is really, really something because of the way he scored that goal. So that would be the moment for me with Martinelli, although the Chelsea one obviously will live a bit longer in the memory, just in terms of the impact or my belief in his talent. I think that was a big one.
What about Reece Nelson? I mean, funnily enough, the one that immediately I think of with him is the moment that wasn't. He had a goal in the home game against Burnley.
Just before half-time, yeah.
Yeah, it's disallowed for an offside in the build-up. And I think he came off at half-time. And, it's sort of one of those that it kind of took his season in a slightly different direction. It wasn't really until Mikel Arteta came in that things picked up for him.
Yeah, he did have an injury, didn't he, but...
Yeah, he did. Well, have you got a more positive one for
him? I think maybe the game where, was it the FA Cup game?
The Leeds game he scored?
Was it, yeah. And maybe the next one where he played and you got a couple of assists maybe, or...
Ah, that was down at...
I know it was lower league, wasn't it?
Portsmouth, that was.
Was that when Torreira got injured? Yeah.
Correct, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that one for me. And I suppose as well, just maybe the idea that Mikel Arteta used him a little bit on the right-hand side ahead of more expensive options, if you like. Just because he provided that kind of that kind of structure to the front three or front five or whatever you want to call it, was just interesting. Sure. That was an interesting thing. What about Saka? All of it.
I mean, all of it. I mean,
I didn't like the bit where he didn't sign his contract, his new contract. Yeah. I wasn't a fan of that bit, but you know, hopefully they can make that happen.
I think with Saka, there are so many moments, but I can't help but think back to Frankfurt. Was it Frankfurt? He played in the front three and he scored his first Arsenal goal from about 25, 30 yards. And it was a great strike. And it was just one of those moments from a player where you think, oh, he's not messing around.
No, no, no.
I mean, look, there have been other fantastic. Is there one for you?
The nutmeg and then the assist.
Sure.
I think, you know, just to have the, I know young players can often be audacious and try things, but, you know, just to have that confidence and ability at his age, you know, really stands out. But yeah, his whole season really has been, or was until it was stopped, great. What about Nketiah? I mean, I think for me, the games where he was started ahead of Lacazette were... were, you know, again, that was an interesting message from Mikel Arteta and a show of faith in the talent that he had. And, you know, he did score, didn't he? Scored
I think
a few
the
goals.
Everton game, wasn't it? He kept his place and he scored in that match.
Yeah, he'd hit so the bar in the previous game, was it? Or
Newcastle, yeah, I think so. He'd come really close. And I think he hit the bar again against Everton, actually. But that would probably be... I mean, for him, the moment is... Arteta keeping him, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it is, you know, because he played, didn't he, in the FA Cup against Bournemouth towards the end of January. And I can't remember if his future had been absolutely decided at that point, but, you know, because he could have gone on loan. But, yeah, to get in the team to score and then to start, you know, some Premier League games and score in the Premier League. He scored against Everton and what have you. So... yeah, those are the moments.
Mm-hmm. Guendouzi. Did we say we'd have Guendouzi? Just trying to think, really. Not as easy, because not necessarily one of those players who, you know, is that eye-catching. I think he won the penalty against Aston Villa.
Yeah, I have to say the drive, I have to say that Aston Villa performance from him was good, really good, because we were down to 10 men and he took on responsibility. He did win the penalty, he drove into the box. And it's the kind of game I think that suits him, if you like, in that it's a bit chaotic. You know, I think maybe some of his issues are with structure and fitting into something that's a bit more rigid, because he does like to, you know, not saying he's like a schoolboy who just wants to be
run
on the ball all the time, but, you know, he does, he really wants to be involved. And I think tempering that to an extent and instilling in him more structure in his game is something that Mikel Arteta will be keen to do. But that Aston Villa second half performance from him was really, really good. So that'll be the
I
one
think
for
that's
me.
The one. I think that is the one. Good answer. Here's a question from... I don't know who it's from, actually. Okay. Yes. It's from Lee, who is at EarlGrey_23. Do you think the likes of Aubameyang will regret not signing when there has been an offer from the club on the table? Given the current state of affairs... could it be they don't get an offer of the same level from the club or even from an outsider?
Yeah, I mean, they could. But, you know, I just don't know what's going to happen in terms of contracts and transfers and the money that's going to be available to players. I mean, they might. Like, if Aubameyang had been offered a three-year extension in January for 225 grand, 250 grand a week... he might look back on it now and regret it, because he's got what, 12 months left, more or less, on a very good deal. You know, make no mistake, Aubameyang's on a lot of money at Arsenal. But, you know, to have an extra 2 years of it, even with a pay cut, would be, you know, nice to have security.
Yeah, look, I think from a financial point of view, maybe there would be some regret, because I think even if he runs his contract down, I don't know, in a post-coronavirus world, I don't think he's going to get the same offer that he would have done. You know, I think all businesses will be impacted. But I don't think it will affect him from a football point of view, shall we say. I don't think that there won't be clubs who want to take him. Maybe on fractionally less wages or slightly significantly less wages than it would otherwise have been. But I still think... there'll be takers for him. You know?
Yeah, the good players, there'll always be a market for the best players.
But
there's no question.
I am strongly inclined to say that, you know, the likely outcome now is that he remains with Arsenal until the end of his contract, I do think. I can't see him being bought out at his age and with his salary and with things the way they are.
Mm. Here's a question from Felix at Felix Down Under. Why is it I so rarely hear about our most capped player, David O'Leary, or the man who holds the record number of appearances for Arsenal? As a fan growing up in the 90s, he was before my time, so I feel I know nothing about him. He never seems to be mentioned in the same breath as Adams, Wright, etc., etc. Why?
I think Leeds is a big part of it.
Mm.
His association with Leeds as manager there, I think, tarnished his reputation a bit. And I think also that he, you know, if you think of the iconic back five of the kind of George Graham era into the Arsene Wenger era, he's not in that, you know. So consequently he's been slightly sidelined. But I mean, you must remember him as a player.
Yeah, well, I mean, somebody who I, you know, really liked because he was an Irishman, and back when I started supporting Arsenal, there were lots of Irishmen from the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland in the team.
And he was like a super classy centre-half.
Yeah, he was
right?
A good ball-playing centre-half. I mean, he had his issues with Ireland when they were managed by Jack Charlton, because Jack Charlton preferred more of an industrial central defender. You know, he didn't want his central defenders doing anything ludicrous like trying to pass the ball to a midfielder or anything like that. So I think he didn't really fit too well with Charlton for the most part. He obviously had that very iconic moment in the World Cup when he scored the penalty against Romania to put Ireland through to the quarterfinals against Italy. But I think I think you're right. The Leeds thing, the fact that he played for the club during what was a pretty fallow period of time in terms of success and trophies. You know, he played in the 70s. Arsenal won the FA Cup in 1979, but lost the FA Cup in 78, lost the FA Cup in 80, lost the Cup Winners' Cup final in 1980. The 1980s themselves were a fairly fallow period, for Arsenal in terms of success. So, you know, players maybe didn't cement legendary status because they won things, you know? He was, of course, part of the team that won the league title at Anfield in 1989. Mm-hmm. He was in the team when Arsenal won the was it the Milk Cup or the Littlewoods Cup against Liverpool in 1987?
Right.
I remember that game because Charlie Nicholas scored both goals for Arsenal. But Ian Rush had put Liverpool ahead. And I think the commentator said something like, and this was a stat that was doing the rounds, well, you know, Liverpool, the last time Liverpool lost a game when Ian Rush scored first was 1932 or something like that. So yeah, the odds were very much against us. And Liverpool at that time, you know, during the 1980s were just the best team in England. So it was a real achievement to beat Liverpool on that day and win the Littlewoods Cup, the League Cup and whatever else. But, you know, he's played 700 odd games for Arsenal. He's there now. You know, he's in the director's box quite a lot. And I did email the club to see if I could get some clarification on that. But, you know the way they are sometimes. They will give you an answer, but there's nothing really to the answer, if you like, you know. So I'd sort of ask, you know, is David O'Leary there in an official capacity? Like, is he now a board member? Is he an honorary this? Is he an honorary that? And it was a very bland, generic answer about how, you know, certain legends represent the club, blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing. So I didn't get any real clarity there.
I think there are sort of on the traditional board, I think there were people who maybe would have liked him to be appointed.
Well, didn't we get a story about how Raul Sanyehi basically vetoed O'Leary's inclusion on the Football Executive committee, or the not the old traditional board, but you know the people who are making the football decisions at the club right now. And you know, you can I'll leave it up to everybody listening as to why Raul Senyahi wouldn't want that to happen. You know. But that's, yeah.
I think O'Leary kind of, from what I understood, was kind of in the middle of a bit of a power struggle between the old board and the executive committee, if you see what I mean. And yeah, there was a bit of a...
Yeah, like a maybe they don't want, you know, any measure of oversight. Maybe, I don't know. I'm just speculating myself.
But, I don't know why. And he... Yeah, it's a shame because, you know... He did tremendous things for Arsenal, didn't he? And played an enormous amount of games. So it is slightly odd that he's not held in slightly more affectionate terms.
Have you got one more?
I think I do, actually. It was about football computer games. This is it. Eddie Longbridge on Twitter said, before the days of FIFA and Pro Evolution, there were many computer games based on football back in the late 80s and 90s. What was your favourite? And he ventures, mine would have been John Barnes' European football on the Amiga.
John Barnes' European football on the Amiga. I wonder, does he do the commentary? Does he talk about, like, Arsenal?
Liverpool FC is hard as hell. United, Tottenham, Arsenal.
Jesus. I tell you what, you know, I love video games. And I grew up playing video games. I had a ZX Spectrum. That was my computer game thing. But in the sort of 80s and 90s, I didn't have a console. I didn't have like a Sega Mega Drive.
Right.
Or a Super Nintendo Chalmers. I had... You know, you could hire them, actually. You know, video stores where you could go and rent a video cassette to watch a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Those old things. After a while, they started renting them out. So you could rent out, like, the console and a couple of games for whatever it is, a fiver. But you had to leave, like, 25 euros as a deposit in case you ran off with the machine. And I don't remember playing too much football on those. It always seemed to be myself and my brother, the Mug Smasher. We'd hire one and stay up all night, like right through to 7 in the morning. But I remember, like, we played Mario and Madden. We played NFL, a lot of NFL, Madden, right. American football. But I did play video games in the arcades, video game arcades. And there was one called Football Champ.
Right.
Which was great. And that was the one I played all the time, where you could, like, knee people in the face and you could play, you know, it was like a World Cup kind of a thing. And you'd pick, I always picked Holland to play with.
Oh, I'm looking at it now. I think I played that on an arcade. And you could tackle people quite violently.
Yes. And you could punch them. And sometimes you get sent off and sometimes you wouldn't.
Yes,
you ran the risk of the referee. Like, sometimes the referee would get knocked over and what have you, and you could then go to town on the opposition.
That was a great arcade game. I remember it very well. Another arcade game I really enjoyed was Virtuous Striker. I don't know if you ever played that. But
yeah, that was a bit too realistic. I remember there was one as well, again, that I used to play in the arcade, but this would have been mid-90s. Football arcade games.
Because I loved, in these early days, Sensible Soccer.
Sensible Soccer.
Sensible Soccer was great because you could sort of score from the halfway line if you angled it right. It was great fun.
Yeah, there was one of those. I think it was that Football Champ game had, every so often, I don't know how you did it. It must have been some kind of combination of joystick and buttons, but it would do, like, super shoot, and the ball would just fly and the goalkeeper would catch it, but the goalkeeper and the ball would go flying out the back of the net.
I have a recollection of that.
I'm gonna have to look this up because I can't remember what it was, but I think it was a top down game rather than a sort of side on, if you like, in the sort of Sensible Soccer style. I can't remember the name of it, but it was brilliant. I spent a lot of 50 pence pieces on that.
And I loved the old Championship Manager, like Championship Manager 2 in the mid-90s was a really good game.
Yeah.
Still is quite a good game if you get it up on an emulator. And, yeah, I think they're the main ones, really. I mean, FIFA, funnily, because FIFA's like now, obviously, the game, really. Mm. But it really wasn't in those
days. No. Pro Evolution was the one. Pro Evolution was the main one, you know, to about 3 or 4. Evolution Soccer 2 was brilliant. If you could get the through ball, oh, fantastic.
Great times. Castello, by the way, I remembered...
Castello and Chimeles, all those guys who played for North London Reds because they didn't have the license.
I remember, yeah, Sensible Soccer had that. And Sensible Soccer had, like, fictional teams as well. Like, there was a team called, like, Fairy Tale Land or something. And they had Hobgoblin up front. He was really good.
He'd want to be. Go on, you remember what?
Oh, I was just speaking of Italians. I remembered while we were talking about the mid-90s, a player who was sort of linked with Arsenal loads. I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember Beppe Signori?
Oh, yes.
Always being talked about as coming to Arsenal in that kind of 96, 97, early days of Wenger, basically. Mm. And it didn't happen in the end.
Wasn't Signori the guy who took penalties with like a one-step run-up?
Yeah, I think so. Left-footed, very clinical. A few injury problems, so he sort of fit the Wenger profile of, you know, he'd had some injury problems that made him a bit cheaper. And yeah, I think he was sort of intended to be the guy, you know, but it didn't happen. We ended up with someone called Anelka and then someone called Thierry Henry.
I suppose it was okay in the end.
I
suppose it'll have to do. All right, well, look, we better leave it there. Thank you as ever for listening. Hopefully we've provided you with some measure of entertainment despite the lack of football during this lockdown and everything else. So, you know, stay well, stay healthy. We hope you're all doing all right and keeping well and you and yours are doing okay. We'll try to do that rewatch thing at some point. We'll organize that. We'll chat schedules off air, James, and see what we can squeeze into the week. So until the next one, folks, take it easy. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Don't listen to the Magpies' orders, by the way.
Okay.
They want you to kill!
The voices.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.